All right, so let's say you finally get that dream home, right? Settle in, and then bam.
Yeah.
Right next door, a business pops up. They're totally legal, got all their permits and everything. But the way they run things day to day, it's making your life miserable.
Oh, yeah. I can see where that would be a problem.
We're talking constant noise.
What?
Lights shining right into your windows. Even damage to your property from their operations. Could you actually sue them?
That's a good question. It really gets to the heart of how we balance individual property rights with, you know, the reality of living in a community. We often think about zoning laws as like the deciding factor for where businesses can be. But what happens when a business follows those rules but ends up being a huge pain for the people living next door?
Yeah, it's almost like being a good neighbor goes beyond just checking off the legal boxes.
Exactly.
And that's what we're diving into today with this case, Wingett v. Winn-Dixie. It's a case out of South Carolina that kind of pits zoning laws against this idea of nuisance. So we've got excerpts from the actual court opinions and some legal briefs. We're going to really unpack the court's logic here.
I think this case is a really fascinating example of how a business can be technically in the right following all the zoning rules, but still end up on the wrong side of the law because of how they're affecting the folks around them.
So let's set the scene. It's 1959 in Sumter, South Carolina. Winn-Dixie opens a brand new supermarket in an area that's zoned for retail. Seems pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, sounds like a normal thing.
But for the people living nearby, the Wingett family and some others, having a bustling supermarket as their new neighbor wasn't quite the experience they were hoping for.
Right. It's not just about the traffic or the crowds that you might expect with any new business. There were some very specific issues tied to how Winn-Dixie was running their store, things that went beyond the typical, you know, inconveniences of living in a neighborhood.
Right, like you deal with some noise, some traffic that's just part of living in a community.
Yeah.
But this went beyond that.
Exactly.
And that's where it gets really interesting. The court documents actually detail some pretty serious complaints about how this store was being operated.
Mm-hmm.
Things like the exhaust fans from the supermarket.
Oh.
They were so powerful, they actually caused vibrations and damage to the residents' properties.
Oh, so it wasn't just noise. It was like actual structural problems.
Exactly. It wasn't just the big stuff either. They also complained about garbage odors wafting into their homes, floodlights shining into their windows all night long, and trash constantly blowing into their yards.
You know, I can understand why they were upset. That goes way beyond just being a little annoying.
It sounds pretty miserable, to be honest.
It does.
So the big question here is whether Winn-Dixie was actually liable for these issues, even though they were technically operating within the rules of the zoning regulations. That's the dilemma the courts had to sort out.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It seems like they were doing what they were allowed to do, but at the same time, it was creating real problems for the people living nearby.
Right. So did the court just side with Winn-Dixie and say, hey, tough luck for the neighbors, you're in the right zone?
Well, not exactly. The court actually awarded the residents $5,000 in damages. But here's the catch. They didn't issue an injunction to shut down the store.
Wait a minute. So the court said Winn-Dixie was responsible for the harm they caused, but they didn't order them to stop operating. How does that work?
That's where things get a little more nuanced. By the time this case made it to the Supreme Court, Winn-Dixie had actually taken steps to fix many of the problems the residents had raised. So the court decided that while the residents deserved to be compensated for the harm they had already experienced, an injunction wasn't necessary because future harm seemed unlikely.
So they basically said, you messed up, pay up, but you can stay open as long as you keep things in check. It's an interesting balance, right?
Exactly. It really shows how the court was trying to be fair to both sides. And it highlights a crucial distinction. Zoning dictates where a business can be, but nuisance law deals with how that business operates. A business can be following all the zoning rules and still be a nuisance if its operations unreasonably interfere with the life of its neighbors.
It's not enough to just have the right permits. You also have a responsibility to be a good neighbor, to think about the impact you're having on the people around you.
I think that's a great point. It's not just about following the letter of the law. It's about being considerate and taking steps to minimize the negative effects your business might have on others.
Right. Like with those exhaust fans, I doubt Winn-Dixie installed them thinking, let's go damage our neighbors' homes.
Ooh.
They were probably just thinking about what they needed to run the supermarket.
Yeah.
But they didn't think about the consequences.
And that's why the court in this case made it clear that there's no one-size-fits-all test for nuisance. It all depends on the context. The court considered the specific neighborhood, how often the harm was happening, and what they called normal sensibilities. What would a reasonable person consider to be too much?
Okay, so how did the court determine that that what Winn-Dixie was doing went beyond everyday inconveniences and crossed the line into being a legitimate nuisance. What kind of evidence were they looking at?
Well, the physical damage caused by those exhaust fans was a huge factor. That was more than just being annoying. It was actual harm to the residents' property. The court couldn't ignore that.
Right. That makes sense. But what about the other complaints? The lights, the smells, the trash? Those things are annoying. But they didn't cause the same kind of obvious damage. How did the court weigh those factors?
The court looked at how often those problems were happening and how bad they were. It wasn't just a one-time thing. It was a pattern of behavior that was consistently messing with the residents' lives.
So it was the cumulative effect of all those things happening over and over again that really tipped the scales.
Exactly. And they considered whether Winn-Dixie could have done anything to prevent these problems. Were they taking any responsibility for the way their operations were impacting their neighbors?
So it wasn't just about whether they were breaking the law. It was about whether they were making an effort to be good neighbors, to be considerate of the people living around them.
Right. And in this case, the court decided that Winn-Dixie could have done more to minimize the problems. It wasn't that they were being intentionally bad neighbors, but they weren't exactly going above and beyond to reduce the impact they were having on the community.
So the big takeaway here is that it's not enough to simply follow the bare minimum of the law. You have a responsibility to consider how your actions affect other people, and to make a genuine effort to be a good neighbor, even if that means going above and beyond what's strictly required.
I couldn't agree more. And that's a principle that applies not just to businesses. It applies to all of us.
Yeah.
We all have a responsibility to be mindful of our impact on the people around us. You know, picking up where we left off, it's important to remember that the court in Winget v. Winn-Dixie didn't just say, okay, residents, you win, case closed. Their decision to award damages, but not shut down the store, really tells us a lot about how they approached this whole situation.
Yeah, that's true. It was a very specific ruling.
Yeah.
So how did they come to that decision? What were the key things the court was thinking about?
Well, one of the most interesting things about this case is that the court acknowledged that Winn-Dixie had actually tried to fix the problems. They had made some changes to the exhaust, fans adjusted the lighting, and seemed to be doing a better job with their garbage.
So the court saw that Winn-Dixie was at least trying to make things right. Did that play a role in their decision to not issue an injunction?
Oh, absolutely. The court basically said, look, we get it. There was harm done in the past, and the residents deserve to be compensated for that. But we're not convinced that Winn-Dixie is going to keep being a nuisance. They'd shown they were willing to change, so why shut them down if they're actively trying to fix things?
So it wasn't just about punishing Winn-Dixie for what they'd already done. The court was also thinking about preventing future harm.
Exactly. And that's a really important part of nuisance law. It's not just about fixing what's already happened. It's about finding solutions that will stop the harm from continuing or happening again. In this case, the court decided that an injunction just wasn't the right solution because Winn-Dixie had proven they could run their business without causing so much disruption.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be fair to force a business to close if they're genuinely taking steps to solve the problems. But I'm curious, how did the court decide how much money to award in damages? What evidence convinced them that Winn-Dixie had gone from being a minor annoyance to an actual legal nuisance?
Okay, so let's start with those exhaust fans. The fact that they were actually causing physical damage to the Winget's property was huge. It wasn't just about people complaining about noise or saying they were annoyed. There was real tangible damage that the court couldn't ignore.
Yeah, you mentioned that before, and it definitely seems like something the court would pay attention to. But what about the other complaints? The things that didn't actually cause physical damage, like the bright lights, the bad smells, and the trash blowing around.
Yeah.
How did the court justify awarding damages for those things?
This is where you can really see how closely the court was paying attention to the details. They didn't just say, oh, lights are bad, smells are bad. They looked at exactly how Winn-Dixie was managing those parts of their business. For example, with the floodlights, the court pointed out that they were shining directly into the residents' homes all night long.
So it wasn't just that there were lights, it was how and where they were being used.
Oh.
Like it was just inconsiderate.
Exactly. Even something that seems small can become a nuisance if it's not handled thoughtfully.
It makes me think about security cameras.
No.
These days, everyone has them. But if they're set up in a way that they're constantly recording your property, that could be a problem too, right?
You're absolutely right. That's a great example. It shows how the principles from this case are still relevant today. And it brings us back to the idea of context that we talked about earlier. The court in Winget v. Winn-Dixie didn't create some strict checklist for what makes something a nuisance. They understood that it all depends on the specific situation.
Okay, so what about the garbage in the trash issue? Every supermarket has garbage. So how did the court decide that Winn-Dixie was handling it in a way that was worse than normal?
Well, it wasn't just about how much garbage there was. The court focused on evidence that the garbage bins were often overflowing, that they were attracting pests, and that trash was constantly blowing onto the residents' property. And remember, these weren't just little annoyances happening once in a while. The court saw a pattern of neglect that was really affecting the residents' quality of life.
So again, it seems like the court wasn't really focused on the activity itself. It was more about the steps, or lack of steps, that Winn-Dixie was taking to minimize the negative impacts.
You got it. And that's one of the key lessons from this case. Businesses have a responsibility to be good neighbors. Even if they are following all the zoning rules, they can't just ignore how they are affecting the people around them.
It almost seems like Winn-Dixie could have avoided this whole mess if they had just paid a little more attention to these basic parts of their business.
That's a great point. This case shows us that being a good neighbor often means doing more than just the bare minimum required by law.
So being mindful of how you affect others isn't just the right thing to do, it's also good business sense.
I agree with you 100%, and that message is even more important today because businesses are so closely connected to the communities they operate in.
So we spent a lot of time talking about the specifics of this case, but I want to step back for a minute and think about the bigger legal picture. What can we learn from Wingate v. Winn-Dixie about how courts usually handle nuisance cases? Are there any common themes or strategies they use when they're trying to figure out if something is a nuisance and what should be done about it?
That's a really insightful question. As we've already said, nuisance law is all about the facts of each case. There's no magic formula. But there are some common threads that you see in a lot of these cases. Courts often look at things like how bad the harm is, how often it happens, what the neighborhood is like, and whether the defendant's actions benefit the community in some way.
Okay, so that all makes sense. The more serious the harm is and the more often it happens, the more likely it is to be considered a nuisance. Mm-hmm. And something that happens in a quiet residential neighborhood is going to be seen differently than if it happened in a busy commercial area.
Right. And the court will also consider whether the defendant is doing something that has some kind of positive impact on the community. For instance, a factory might make noise and pollution, but it also provides jobs and helps the economy.
Right. So there's this balancing act between the harm that's being caused and the social good that the activity provides. It's not just about whether the defendant is breaking the law. It's about whether their actions are reasonable, given the circumstances.
Exactly. And that's what makes this area of the law so interesting. It's not just about following a set of rules. It's about finding fair solutions to problems that happen in the real world.
Okay, so let's bring it back to the lawyers who are listening to this. What are the main things they should take away from Wingate v. Winn-Dixie if they're advising clients on these kinds of issues?
I think the biggest takeaway is that following zoning rules isn't always enough. It doesn't mean that businesses are free to create problems for their neighbors. Lawyers need to tell their clients to think ahead about how their business might affect the community around them and to do things to reduce any potential harm.
So it's not just about avoiding lawsuits. It's about being a responsible part of the community.
Absolutely. And from a legal standpoint, lawyers need to be prepared to have these tough conversations with their clients. They need to help them understand how nuisance law works and what could happen if they don't consider how their businesses are impacting other people.
Well, this deep dive into Wingate v. Winn-Dixie has been really eye-opening. It's a case that has a lot to teach us about the importance of being aware of how we affect others and finding that balance between individual rights and what's best for the community.
I couldn't agree more. And even though this case was decided a long time ago, the things it established are still important today as we deal with new types of nuisances in our modern world, which actually leads us perfectly into our next section.
So, welcome back. We've been really digging into this case, Wingate v. Winn-Dixie, and it shows how something that seems simple, like a supermarket bothering its neighbors, can bring up some pretty complicated legal stuff. But the thing is, this case isn't just some old story. The ideas in it are really relevant even now, especially as technology gives businesses new ways to maybe affect the people around them.
Yeah, it's amazing how a case from way back in 1961 could help us understand nuisance issues that didn't even exist then. Back then, it was exhaust fans and floodlights. Now we're dealing with things like the constant hum of server farms or the bright glow from those huge digital billboards.
You're right. It's like the technology changes, but the basic conflict stays the same. That balance between what a business is allowed to do and how that affects other people, it's still an issue.
Exactly. And the courts focus on how a business operates, not just where it's located, is super important here. Take that server farm example. Let's say it's built in an industrial zone, perfectly legal according to zoning. But that constant noise and the heat it makes are making life awful for the people who live nearby. Do you think they could sue, even though the company followed the zoning rules?
It sounds a lot like that Winn-Dixie situation. Just because you're allowed to be somewhere doesn't mean you can just ignore how you're affecting others.
That's it. The company still needs to run that server farm in a way that causes the least disruption possible. Maybe that means putting in soundproofing or finding ways to manage the heat better. Maybe it even means thinking about a different location entirely.
It's like you said earlier. It's not just about checking boxes on a permit. There's a responsibility to be a good neighbor that goes further than just doing the bare minimum legally.
Right, and that's where the idea of balancing interests comes in. The court in Winget realized you can't just focus on what the business wants, like running smoothly and making money. You also have to think about the people who live nearby and their right to enjoy their property without being bothered too much.
That makes sense. But it also seems really hard to know where to draw that line. Is there some clear way to decide when a business has gone too far and it's become a real nuisance?
Sadly, no. As we've been talking about, nuisance law is all about the specific facts of the case. There's no easy formula. But there are some things courts usually consider, like how bad the harm is, how often it happens, what that neighborhood is like, and even if the business is doing something good for the community.
So it's all about making a judgment weighing different factors. It's not just about black and white rules.
Exactly. And that's why this area of law is so tricky, but also so interesting. It's about finding solutions that are fair and make sense, considering what's going on in each situation.
So for business owners, what's the best way to avoid ending up in a situation like Winn-Dixie? What are the key things to remember?
I'd say the most important thing is that following zoning rules isn't the end of the story. You have to think ahead about how you'll affect the community. Talk to your neighbors, understand what they're worried about, and be open to feedback. It's so much easier to deal with problems before they turn into lawsuits.
So it's about building good relationships, being a good neighbor, not just trying to avoid legal trouble.
Precisely. And practically speaking, businesses should really consider getting advice from experts. There are people who specialize in things like environmental impact studies, noise reduction, all sorts of things that are important for nuisance law. Spending a little money up front to get that guidance could prevent a lot of headaches later on.
That's really good advice. It seems like Winget v. Winn-Dixie, even though it's an older case, gives us a lot of useful information for dealing with these issues.
Definitely. And it shows us that the law has to keep up with new challenges, new technology, new ways that businesses impact the world. But even as things change, those basic ideas, fairness, reasonableness, respecting other people's rights, those always stay important.
Well said. It feels like we really explored this one in depth, from those noisy exhaust fans back in 1959 to the possible nuisances of our digital world. Winget v. Winn-Dixie gives us some valuable insights into how to balance what individuals want with what's good for the community.
I agree completely. It's been a really interesting conversation, and I hope it gets our listeners thinking more about these issues.
I'm sure it will. And that's it for this deep dive. As always, we hope our listeners keep those legal minds sharp. And we'll be back with you next time for another fascinating look into the world of law.